Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. This is Twombo Kapilikisha from Bonn, Germany. Thank you so much for tuning into Zambia Block Talk Radio. This is Diaspora and Truth. I am broadcasting to you from Bonn, Germany. The weather is nice and sunny these days. We are over the winter hump. Everything is, you know, springtime. It's flowering. There's bees. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I would like to send my condolences to all those that are now going into the winter phase, that is those people that are in the southern hemisphere. And I would just like to say, yes, I'm glad that I'm back. I wasn't here last week, but I am back on Diaspora and Truth, and I'm very excited to be here. I have a special guest today on Diaspora and Truth. I've been having, you know, Zambian women that are doing great things, and yeah, I just wanted to introduce you to a young lady called Mwizukanji Namwawa. Now, you may all know her by the name Kanji. She is a Zambian musical artist. She has been singing for a long, long time. And yeah, I'm really happy to have her on the show today. She has been singing since I've known her. I have known her since high school. I went to high school with Kanji. She started her singing career back then, and then she released an album shortly after we finished school. And then she had a break, and she has just released a new album called Zanga. So, Kanji, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Okay, great. So hello? I would just like, yeah, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, great. So I just wanted to introduce you to some of the Zambians that are listening from the diaspora. I mean, we have Zambians that already know your music, and they know your music from a while back when you released your first album. And there are some people that are listening now that are wondering, who is Kanji? What kind of music does she sing? Where has she suddenly come from? So could you just give us, you know, a little bit of information about you? Where were you born? What tribe are you? You know, these things that are important to Zambians that are listening.
I was born in Lusaka, at the University Teaching Hospital, sometime in the 80s. I am Namwanga. Both my mom and my dad are Namwanga, so I'm like Namwanga through and through. Mm-hmm. And I did most of my education in this I had like a 5-year stint in the UK where I did some of my high school, and then went to the University of Zambia.
Oh, Okay, I think we managed to lose Kanji on her call there, and I'm hoping that Charlie can help us get her back. So Kanji was just explaining to us who she is, you know, where she comes from. She is Zambian. She is Namwanga. You know, that is one tribe that you usually don't hear about, especially in Zambia. I mean, I think she's the only person that I know that is Namwanga. I wouldn't even be able to pinpoint right now where people that are Namwanga come from. I would guess the central province, but if I am wrong, please feel free to, you know, correct me. And I would just like to, you know, while we try and get her back, I'm just going to talk a little bit about, you know, her new album. So her new album is called Zanga, and I am actually not sure what language that is, so I'm hoping that she can come back on and let us know what it means and what language it is. And this album that she has released is actually a gospel album. Now, for those of you that have been listening to Diaspora and Truth for a while, there have been a couple of times when I have used some of her songs as intro, and some people have written asking, you know, who was that singer? What is that song? Where can I get it? And things like that. So I brought Kanji on the show so you can hear from her what her music is about. You know, how did she come to write those songs? Did she write them herself? Who has she collaborated with? And whether you are able to get this music online, especially for Zambians in the diaspora, that is usually what the biggest question is can I buy this music online? And a lot of the music that we have played here on the show are from artists whose music you can buy on iTunes. A lot of the times the misconception is that if you have a Zambian artist, if you want their music, you are going to have to go to Zambia, but that is not true. If you're looking for a particular artist, most people do have their music on iTunes or on Amazon as well. So if you're looking for a particular Zambian artist, I would encourage that you just go ahead and you take a look on there. So what I'm going to do now is I'm just going to play a short clip of the song that we started with, Kanji's song. It is called Brand New. So if you could just take a listen while I try and get Kanji back on the line. And yeah, you can formulate your own idea of what the sound is like and whether it's something that you like or not. So here is Kanji's song called Brand New. Okay, that was just a taste, another taste of Kanji's music. Kanji, I hope that you are back on now without any problems.
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Okay, great. So you were just telling us a little bit about who you are and about how you got into the music business.
Yeah. So basically, I was saying that, you know, I've always been a musical person. Even just growing up, I've always been a very musical child, and music for me has always been a way that I am able to express myself. You know, it's a form of expression, and to a large extent, it's just part of who I am. So I got into the music, the thing of singing very early in my life. I used to sing in church, I used to sing in Sunday school, I used to sing around the house. And professionally, in terms of recording, I did my first recording sometime in 2000 with a record label called Cypher Sound. Yeah. And then took a little break. And then 2003, I think I started working on my own sort of solo project. And there's an album which came out. It was self-titled, something called Kanji. And it had, you know, various songs on it. And it came out in 2004. And then at the time I did that album, I was a student at the University of Zambia. And then just moving forward from there, after I graduated, realized that obviously I needed to focus a lot more on the professional side of things, because I didn't know really what it meant to be a practicing lawyer. And obviously that entailed I needed to dedicate my time. And also I need to establish myself professionally. I need to figure out what is it that I, you know, what I want to be known as. I want to be known as Kanji the musician or Kanji the professional. And having invested so much time and energy in the academics, I just figured, okay, you know, this music thing is good, but it's over. And focus on this other thing. And that's what I did.
Well, it's interesting that you say...
But obviously, that...
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm listening. Ask.
Okay, so I said it's interesting that you talk about growing up in a musical family. You sang at home. I mean, we sang at school. And there's obviously a lot of young women who we may have gone to school with that have thought about getting into a musical career but initially didn't. Would you say that you had your family support in recording your first album? Was it something that your family supported you with? Because I think one of the things that holds back a lot of young Zambian ladies who can sing is the perception of what the music industry is, and whether this is actually a perception or not, if the music industry really is the way it's perceived to be. Would you say that you had your family's support and that helped you get into the music industry?
Well, yes and no. I would say yes, because my family knew that this is something that I'm very passionate about, and it wasn't something that was a big surprise per se, because, I mean, I've always been just this person who's been very passionate about singing. And I would say no as well, because I think that it's something that scared, I think, my father especially, because he didn't know where I wanted to go with it, and then I was so young, and then to him, I mean, he wanted me to just get an education, and he thought that maybe the music thing would kind of derail me from all that. And at that time, especially at that time, I'll just be very honest, the music thing was not something that I could do and say, I'm going to live on this thing and I'm going to make this my career, and it's something that I'm going to depend on for a living. And I think that scared him a little bit. And obviously, he tried to steer me in this other direction while he sort of focused on, you know, the education and the professional side of my life. And I don't think there was anything wrong with him steering me in that direction. I completely understand his method, you know, him being a parent and, you know, me being a girl child as well. And it's just something that he wasn't very comfortable with at the time. Yeah.
Okay, and so then you went on to University of Zambia.
Yeah, so I think that it's...
Lawyer, and you are a practicing lawyer, are you?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. I mean, there's not a lot of Zambian artists that I can say that I know that are lawyers as well. How do you balance being a musical artist and a lawyer at the same time? I mean, yeah, I can't imagine being in court and having somebody whose album I bought coming to either, you know, defend or be on the other side.
Yeah.
How do you balance that?
You know, it's just because I love doing both of them so much, I don't feel like one, I find time to do both of them, because I don't even know how to explain it, you know. And at the end of the day, I find that when you accept who you are, accept what it is that you are able to do, whether creatively or professionally, it makes it easier for other people to accept you. So, you know, there's all kinds of perceptions out there about musicians and how can you be a musician and be a legal practitioner. This is a very safe profession, ABCD, ABCD. personally, like I said, the music for me is a way that I express myself. And now, with having done this gospel album, the music for me is a way in which I have found to release and to worship my God and to express my faith, my spirituality, my expression.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do not see anything wrong with it, you know. And I think that everything that has ever been done on this earth, and as much as we've seen it all before, but something to be done, there was somebody who did it first. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that I feel like it cartels me or it derails me in any way. In fact, if I wasn't doing it, I know that I would be extremely unfulfilled. I would be literally very miserable if I wasn't doing it. It's something that I cannot explain. You know what I mean? It's like part of who I am. Like, if you get candy, this is what you get. This is the whole package. This is who she is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, a show like this,
yeah.
Diaspora and Truth, is targeted towards Zambians that are living in the diaspora. And for somebody like me, I know your music because I was in Zambia. And there's a lot of Zambians that are living abroad that had left probably even before you released your first album. So have you in any way strategized how you can get more exposure to Zambians that are living abroad? I mean, apart from this show that we're doing right now, there's a lot of Zambians that live abroad and they love Zambian music, but they're not able to get a feeling of what it is. I mean, I think even for the song that we played, the brand new song that I played, the intro for this show, the reason that I love that song is that it has a very modern beat. It's very well done. It's, you know, a nice loungy song that I can play, you know, anywhere and any time. And I think this surprises a lot of Zambians in the diaspora that haven't been home in a long time, because a lot of the times the Zambian music that gets filtered is the bad sort of Zambian music. Do you think that the Zambian music industry is doing enough to expose you to the rest of the world?
Obviously, I feel that there's a lot more that could be done in as far as marketing an artist as a brand internationally in Zambia. I think that obviously the caliber and the quality of music that is being produced has improved tenfold. But there's no point in having this really good product if nobody gets to hear it, nobody gets to see what it's about. For me personally, you asked me if there's a strategy to sort of market the music beyond the confines of our country or our continent. It's not the easiest thing to do, I find, you know, to get the right sort of promoters, the right people involved in ABCD. But I am working with a relatively new record label called Mojo Music. And basically what we're trying to do is sort of try and get the music out there as much as possible. I mean, right now the music is online. It's on Amazon, it's on iTunes, it's on whatever international store that you'd want to sort of look for it, you can find, because the album is out there. But also, again, there's no point of having it out there if nobody else knows that it's out there. And obviously doing interviews like this and, you know, talking about it and trying to get as much sort of momentum behind it as much as possible also helps.
Mm-hmm.
But I will be very frank with you, it's not the easiest thing to do, if not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so your current album is called Zanga. Mm-hmm. What does that mean? What language is it? And why did you come up with that name for the album?
Okay. Well, like I said, I am Namwanga. And Zanga in my language means come. And like I said, this album is an expression of my spirituality, my expression of my relationship and work with God. That far. And Zanga comes from the scripture Matthew 11:28, where Christ says, come over weary and weary, and I will give you rest.
Mm-hmm.
So the word Zanga means come, and it's basically just used from that scripture, which says come to Christ. And I felt like, you know, having gone through the process of recording this album, and as much as, you know, I am a Christian, the process of recording the album itself was very it was like a process of transformation, even for myself. You know, and it brought me to a place where I just wanted to express the goodness that I have experienced with God and the joy that I have found in having decided to work with Him. So generally, it's a very uplifting album. You know, there's nothing on it that is lamenting or complaining. It's just a very happy, I would like to say, soulful, you know, type of feel in the album. So yeah, that's what Zanga means. It means come.
Okay. And, you know, you talk about it being an uplifting album. A lot of the times when people think about Zambian gospel albums, you either have the church albums where you have, you know, the choir and the choir master, or you have those that lean towards more of the rumba style dance music, you know, and listening to the songs on your album, they're a bit more poppy, a bit more targeted to, I guess, our generation and people, you know, with our kind of music. What kind of response have you gotten for your album? Has it been good? Have you, you know, what kind of criticism, what kind of praise have you gotten? What has the response been?
Okay. Well, you know, because also people knew me as Candy, the secular artist. So it was sort of like, for me, like a cautious sort of step, like to gauge what people would actually think after having made sort of this transformation. Would they accept it? Would they, you know, all those questions sort of running through my mind. But once it was made public and we just basically announced that this album is coming on and we dropped a few promos, the response was just me, very overwhelming. You know, I was just sort of taken aback by the feedback that I was getting. Like, people embraced this decision. It was almost as though this is what people had always wanted me to do with my voice, at least the people that I've managed to interact with. You know, obviously I can't get everybody, but this is like on the ground that I have observed is that people have been with me on this journey and they've understood this journey and are basically commending this transformation. So it's been very encouraging, basically very, very encouraging.
So you mentioned that the albums that you did before were secular and this album now, Zanga, is, you know, a gospel album. So obviously the transformation would be that you have grown closer to God in your walk, you know, during this time when it was when you were not, you know, doing any singing and things like that. One of the misconceptions that people have when an artist has had an album which is secular and then they do a gospel album, a lot of people say, well, now they're doing gospel because they couldn't sell secular albums, so now they want to use God to make money. What are your thoughts on comments like that?
Well, Tumble, I'll be very, very honest with you. You know, I would never have come back to the music if I was not doing it for God. Like I said, I mean, you know, but when I stopped doing the music, literally, I just stopped. I just told myself, it's over. I'm never going to get back to it. That's just, season in my life, it's over. It's gone. But obviously, I've always been a Christian. But I found myself in a place where I realized that I obviously needed to rededicate my life to the things of God, having made that decision. I just felt an overwhelming sort of, I don't even know how to explain it, but this hunger and this gap in my life. And it took me back to this singing, this music. Like I had abandoned a very big part of who God made me to be. And it made me so sad, it made me so sorrowful, and it was like God was calling me back to it and reminding me why it is that he saw it fit to give me this gift to me. You know what I mean? And I struggled so much with succumbing to that, because I thought it didn't make sense in my life right now. I'm this lawyer, I've got this ABCD going on, and I've got this job, but it just didn't make any sense, and I made so many excuses for myself, and as the years and time progressed, it just made me so conflicted and so empty inside. And it wasn't until I just sort of decided, you know what, if God is asking me to do this, he's going to make a way and he's going to make it possible, and I surrendered. And it was like an enormous weight was lifted off my shoulders, and it's amazing, but literally things just sort of orchestrated themselves in a way that I found myself connected to all the right people, all the right paths that led me to the right studio, the right producer. And even when I started out, I didn't even have the songs, you know what I mean? I hadn't written like a single song. But it all just magically happened and was put together. And I know now that this is really what I was always supposed to be doing, you know? Because of the way it makes me feel. It just makes me feel like a complete person.
So the songs on the album, do you sing any songs in Namwanga? Because before, when you had sort of been cut off, I sort of admitted to the listening audience that I don't even know where Namwanga people are found in Zambia. My guess was Central Province, but I'm not sure. Do you actually sing Namwanga?
Well, yeah, the title track itself is called Zanga.
Mm-hmm.
So, hello?
Yes?
Yeah, so that is like the bulk of that song is in Namwanga. So, I mean, I'm not like the most fluent Namwanga speaking individual, but I understand the language and I'm able at least to hold a decent conversation. And yeah, so there's that one song, Zanga, which is like my favorite song on the album because it's very sort of personal to me. Well, that one is in Namwanga, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and what would you say to parents? Yeah. Especially Zambian parents that have children that want to get in the music industry. You know, they may be in Zambia because we have people that are in Zambia that listen to the show as well, or they are in the diaspora. They've had their children here. You know, their children have grown up. And you know that where we come from, most of the time, parents tend to push their children towards careers in, you know, sciences or banking or things like that. So the arts get pushed to the back. Now, for somebody like you who has had a chance to be both an artist and also has an education as a lawyer and you are a practicing lawyer, what would you advise, you know, Zambian parents of children that want to pursue a career in music? You know, you're a parent now yourself. What would you say to these people about it?
Yeah. Well, you kind of have to be realistic. In our setup, in our environment, you cannot forego the importance of education. That one, you cannot subtract it. Important. You know, because even when you do decide to venture into the creative side of who you are, when you do have a background in education and you have advanced yourself academically, it sets you apart, you know. It's like a springboard. You are different because you have this education. So it has to start there. You know, but in as far as, like, the talent that you may have in your child, as a parent, you have a responsibility to nurture it, to make it grow, to make sure that it is steered in the right direction because it has the potential to sort of, you know, it can bring distraction, it can bring confusion, it can bring problems, you know, because with the music and the art comes popularity, comes the whole celebrity status, comes, you know, you find yourself maybe in certain environments where you find all sorts of temptations and you're exposed to so many things that might actually lead you astray. So when you have a friend who's there and sort of, you know, like trimming you, when you go there, they trim you and they shape you, you need that. You know what I mean? You need that. And that, I think that's what many young people don't have. Because you have maybe parents or guardians who are against it, you rebel. And you can do it, it's like a form of rebellion. And then you are on your own. You know, and you find yourself faced and confronted with all these evil vices and people who may want to take advantage of you, whether contractually or sexually, all that stuff. Because you're on your own. Because when you do decide to venture into this side of things, like you are rebelling. So even for myself, I mean, if my child came to me and I noticed that they have a creative talent, you know, like singing or something in the arts, whatever, I know that I have a responsibility to nurture it, to make it grow in the direction that it is supposed to go, so that it becomes beneficial to them in the end. Because when you are able to do something artistic or whatever, it kind of has to bring income to you. You know what I mean? And as a parent, deterring it or thwarting it and saying you can't do it, it just brings a gap between you and your child, first of all, because they end up feeling like you don't understand them. And even when they do decide maybe to be obedient to you, it makes them an incomplete person in themselves. You know what I mean? And it's just better to come up with some kind of equilibrium between the two. But like I said, you cannot run away from the fact that you need an education. You do.
Okay, great. So for everybody that is listening, you're listening to Diaspora and Truth. This is Zambia Block Talk Radio, and we have Kanji on the show today. We are talking about her life, her music, you know, how every all of that is going. Her music is available on Amazon and iTunes, and we're going to send you the links, or give you the links, you know, as soon as the show ends. So I would just like to play one of Kanji's songs that you have heard me play on this show before as an intro. So I will just play the song, and then I will have Kanji about, you know, what the song is, who wrote it, who was featured on it. And then we'll, after the song, we'll talk a little bit more about her music, who she's collaborated with, and the Zambian music industry. So here, have a listen to Kanji's song, Into Mubushi.
I had to hop on the remix. Kanji, featuring Mag 44. Pamene vione kamonga ni kafuafua Mavuto ya beba imwe ya vwata Ati there's no hope wewe wajamba Boza, yesu ndiye njila mababa So if you lost, he's your navigator Navigation, yes he can navigate ya Though we ain't cars, but we're driven by a great God So even in the bush we ain't lost in Tungulushi
Okay, that was Kanji's song, Into Mubushi. That actually is my favorite song off of her album. I've heard most of it, and that one I play all the time, and I play it on the show all the time as well. And also, I'd like to shout out to, you know, Ms.
That's
S.
Awesome.
That is in Australia, who also loves this song, so I played it also especially for her. She's also been listening. So Kanji, I would just like to go into, you know, the artist that you've worked with on this album. Were you the main writer of the song, or did you have co-writers?
Yeah.
That helped you, and how did that all work? How does it work to put together an album?
Well, it's a lot of work, especially for a person like you who has like a day job. So you have to really find time to squeeze in, you know, being in the studio and ABCD. But as far as all the songs are concerned, I wrote all the songs on the album. And they were produced by a very talented gentleman called Magnus Mando. Stage name is Mag 34. And all the guitars on the album were played by also a very young, talented gentleman called Mr. Sam Kikindu. Yeah, so we worked together, and Mag 34 also featured on the this particular version of Indian Roshi that you played. And my sister Bwadia features on a song called Confess. Tom B also features on a song called Woman. And Nathan Miranda actually plays the saxophone on Brand New. So those are the people who actually I was putting some of the features on the album. Yeah.
Now, have you found it easy to collaborate with other Zambian artists, you know, to work on this album? Because I think another perception we have of the music industry is that there's always some sort of beef going on, people don't get along, you know, this kind of thing. Was it easy for you to collaborate with these people?
I don't know. I don't think there is so much beef in the gospel music circles, unless maybe I don't have my ear to the ground. But I didn't encounter any problems whatsoever. And funnily enough, you know, like Brand New was actually the last song that we recorded on the album. And after Mag produced, made the beat and everything, we kind of felt like there was something missing in it. And, you know, it dawned on us that, okay, you know, there's a guy called Nathan Miranda who plays saxophone. And we just called him up, and he was so happy, and he was so gracious to be part of the project, which is also another awesome thing. And he came, and he did his thing, and that was it. I haven't encountered any sort of negative energy or negative vibe. Obviously, gospel music has its own genres, you know. There's a very sort of wide listening audience, and they all have their own preferences, and they all have their own way in which they are ministered to. So I haven't sort of encountered any crisscrossing with anybody. It's just a matter of just appreciating that, okay, this is the kind of artist that this is, and this is, you know, you kind of just appreciate each other in your own differences and your own uniqueness. And that's always been my case. Yeah, so I haven't encountered anything that I would openly point out and say that has been an issue for me. No, I haven't.
So, you know, with you being a musical artist and people have access to your music, people are listening to what you're saying, and you have a gospel album, and of course this is targeted towards the audience in putting across the message about Jesus Christ and things like that. Have you in your career thought about using your music to address the social or political issues going on in Zambia? Since it is, you know, you have a voice. Have you thought about singing about what Zambian people are going through, what decisions they can make, and things like that? Have you thought about that?
Wow, that's a very interesting question. Wow. I wouldn't say yes. I haven't. I think that maybe I have access to other avenues and other means of expressing myself in those subjects. And I think that for a person like me, and especially with my job and where I work and ABCD, that may not necessarily be the most appropriate for me to start expressing, you know, political views and whatnot and things like that. I don't think that I would want to venture into anything like that musically, but of course I am alive to the fact that, you know, I was sort of aggrieved about something and I needed to sort of step up and, you know, say something. There are other channels and other avenues which should be more suited to me.
So are there any programs, are there any musical programs that you know of currently in Zambia that are helping young people hone their skills? I mean, I know that you can go to Evelyn Hone. There's some musical things that you can do there. But do you know of any musical programs that young people can go to and sort of, you know, work on their talents or their skills? And is this something that you would also be interested in starting to help young people that are interested in the industry? And it may not necessarily be that they want to become superstars, but basically just because they love music. Do you know of a place like that? And is this something that you would like to be involved in if it was, you know, available?
Yeah, that is a big, huge lacuna in the industry, in as far as that is concerned. But, you know, I do get a lot of young people sort of approaching me, whether it's just physically or in my inbox and things like that, and asking me how I can help them or mentor them, sort of get themselves out there and recognize and get their music out there. So I like the fact that obviously there's a huge gap, and it's not easy to actually get out there and get established and be recognized as an artist in whatever field that you are in. So mm-hmm. it is something that I definitely be interested in, and it's something that I'm thinking about venturing into. I'm just trying to sort of, you know, package my head and trying to figure out how it is that it could actually operate on the ground and who it is that could come in, sort of help out and be involved, so that, you know, we make this industry viable, we make it, you know, we add the prestige that this industry deserves, you know, because if you are an artist, you are essentially, you are a brand, you know, and that is something that I think is missing from our market. You know, you find certain artists that they leave, or the perception that they have on the ground is mediocre. It doesn't get the amount of respect that it should really be given. You know, they don't get the recognition that is deserved, you know, because when you are a musician, it's almost as well, it's an insult, you know, that musician. Like, there's nothing respectable about you as an individual, and it's all about branding, and it's all about getting the public to appreciate the fact that what you are doing is something commendable and something to be held in high esteem. And for young people, it's that much harder. You know, established artists face that kind of negative vibe. So as an upcoming one, nobody knows who you are. You don't know where to go. You don't know who to reach on, to hang on to. You don't know how to hone and nurture your talent. There's nothing like that. There's a huge gap. As a result, you find that, you know, young people are releasing music, they're not releasing albums, and they're like one hit wonder here today and then going tomorrow, because there's nobody there to sort of steer them in the right direction and promote them and invest in them. Because at the end of the day, you need to invest. It's not making music and releasing CDs is not cheap. Mm-hmm. Time is not cheap. So you need to get, you know, somebody or some company to invest in those mm-hmm. young people and to sort of teach them to hone their skills, you know. Mm-hmm. So in a nutshell, yes, it is something that I'll be very interested in getting involved in, and right now I'm just trying to see how it should all work out.
So now that we are now on a platform where you can speak to Zambians that are living in the diaspora that love Zambian music but can pretty much only access it, or they've thought they can only access it if somebody uploads it on YouTube. I mean, now, for example, your album is available on iTunes, on an Amazon. What would you like to say to the Zambians that are living in the diaspora, and how can they support Zambian music from where they live?
I think that obviously one of the biggest ways that they can support is to buy the music of these sites like iTunes and Amazon, and obviously to get artists. I imagine that, you know, Zambia living in the diaspora, I have communities, you know, where they sort of interact at some level as Zambians or as people coming from. I don't know, but I would like to imagine that exists. I'm going to invite artists over, you know, to give them that kind of exposure, that experience, you know, so that artists are able to get themselves out there and get their music out there. And whatever channels, you know, I mean, right now the internet has made the world become like so small and so tiny. So I know that there are blogs and online magazines and charts and things like that, where you can just keep the buzz going, keep telling about Zambian music and Zambian artists and promote them and sell your brand, even though you are out. I mean, just the fact of you being out there, that is something that could bring value to your country. Mm-hmm. You could sell your country. I mean, the arts are a big part of what your country is, and it's something that I think as an individual, even out there in Zambia, you have a responsibility to do, because by virtue of you being out there, it kind of has the potential to add value to what is back home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just what I can encourage people to do. You know, talk about the music, spread the music, spread the message of the music in whatever way you can. And, yeah, I think that could take us like you said, we need to support each other, you know. That's one thing in Zambia that maybe we struggle with a lot is joining together and supporting each other. And supporting each other means, you know, buying the music, investing in the music, investing in artists, inviting the artists over, and creating for us where you can expose the art and artists in general. Yeah.
One thing you mentioned was, you know, inviting the artists over. Now, one thing that I have seen, especially in the U.S. and in London, actually, is when they have these big independence parties, we hear that Mumbi is coming, that JK is coming, you know. So in that way, I don't know how they managed to organize it, but they managed to get these people over there for these big parties. Now, I've never heard about that happening for a Zambian gospel artist. Is this because, you know, obviously Mumbi and JK are very popular Zambian musicians, but, I mean, not all Zambians only love their music. Would it be then the fact that nobody that is organizing these things for a gospel artist, is that, could that just be the reason?
Shall we say that again?
So, you know, like, maybe I could just make my question clearer. I mean, you hear of Mumbi and JK going abroad and doing all these shows and things like that. And honestly, I have not heard of a Zambian gospel artist, even Pompey, as popular as he is, I haven't heard of Pompey doing a show in London or in the UK and things like that. Could this be the fault of their record label?
Yeah.
I mean, is it the record labels, Mumbi and JK's record label, are they the ones that are sending them out there? How do you look at that situation?
In terms of like answering to JK and Mumbi, I have no idea. I could not possibly even begin to say. But for like gospel artists, I know that a couple of gospel artists, Bombay included, who've had shows outside Zambia, but of course within Africa, you know, they've had shows where invited and ABCD and things like that. But you also have to understand that the market is different for a person like Mumbi and a person like Pompey. The market is very different. So gospel music has its own different market. And obviously, where perhaps a person like Mumbi would perform is not exactly the same that a person like Pompey would perform. It's a completely different environment because gospel music is ministry. You are ministering to people, you know. So I really don't know why it hasn't happened yet, but I have a good feeling that, you know, with people like you out there, they're heading this music and this campaign, and everybody else who's listening, that I think that is a real and true hunger for music to receive as much exposure as possible. And maybe people have just not been alive to the fact that maybe if you invite a gospel artist over, would they be willing to come and things like that. Nobody has just explored that potential. And obviously, another thing that you have to remember is that the gospel music in Zambia has just boomed in recent years. You know, it has just sort of begun to take the industry by storm. Before, it wasn't so much, you know, they're just like, oh, okay, it's gospel music. But now, the caliber of the music that is coming out, like you said, is music that is targeting our generation and even generations which are younger, you know, because somebody needs to minister the young people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's just sort of, it's steps. You know, you don't just wake up one day and suddenly you are everywhere. It's a work in progress. So we managed to sort of, like, people are talking about the music, people are talking about the artists, you know? And the biggest artist, I think, last year was a gospel artist in Zambia. And that, I don't know if it has ever even happened before, like that, where the gospel music is topping even just normal charts, you know? Topping those charts. It's a recent phenomenon. So even if it's something like a gospel artist going out and ministering internationally, it would equally have to be something new, because everything that is happening, in my view, is just like a new birth. So we just want to see how far this music can go and how far the artists themselves can go in terms of exposure and performances. Yeah.
Okay, so now I would just like to open up the phone lines. If anybody has any questions for Kanji, please go ahead and press 1 on your dial pad. I will go straight to Canada. Mr. Charlie, please go ahead with your question or your comment for Kanji.
Thank you, Twambo. Kanji, welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio. I have two questions, actually. The first one is on the facilities. When I hear you are in studio, you are recording, I want to imagine what kind of facilities you're having in Zambia, or some of this work has to be done outside, say, South Africa. I don't know. I could be wrong. But what kind of the facilities do you have right now, which most Zambians are exposed to?
Okay. Well, all my music was recorded in Zambia, and it was mastered and engineered in Zambia at a studio called IM, which is a studio where guys like Abel Chingo and Bobby and Mike 44 have recorded from. So the facilities are there, and they're adequate, you know, and I don't, personally, I wouldn't say that we compromise on the quality or anything like that. The standard that you get in recording the music when you go to a state-of-the-art studio in Zambia is the same standard that you get in any studio. So I don't think that I would complain about the standard. No, I wouldn't. I think that we have adequate facilities to be able to make this music within Zambia itself.
Interesting question, discussion, Twambo and yourself, on you being a lawyer and a musician at the same time. We do understand music doesn't sell as much as in records, people buying. But if you have to make money, you have to do a tour, which can sometimes has its own way of demand in as far as time is concerned.
Yes.
With your profession, are you saying you are pretty much confined to Lusaka, or you are also thinking of going on tour, and how does that correlate with the profession?
Well, honestly, if I was going to go on a tour, which is interesting that you brought it up, because it is something that myself and management have been thinking about and trying to figure out how we could possibly fit it in. It would obviously be something that we planned for, and as far as work is concerned, I would obviously have to get some time off from work. And that is something that I don't think about, because it has to be something long-term. So obviously the fact that I do have this 9-to-5 sort of makes it difficult, and it inhibits me from doing as much as my colleagues perhaps in the industry are able to do, because maybe this is what they do full-time. But I wouldn't say that my performances are limited to Lusaka. No, they're not. I obviously intend to do a tour, but obviously because of my work, I have to transportate for it. Yeah.
Kanji, there's a question that has come to my inbox on Facebook, and the question is, how do you deal, this also pertains to your career, but also how do you deal being an artist, a lawyer, and a mother as well? Like, how do you manage to tie all those three things? And how has this affected your family life? That was the first question. And the second question is, a lot of people do not want to let gospel artists justify actually selling their music. People think that gospel music should be cheaper than other music. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so the first one was how I'm managing to juggle family and music and ABCD. Well, I think that I kind of answered that question when I said that because I love doing everything that I do, I find and I make time for it. And ultimately, when I'm able to do all those things, it makes me a happier person, a happier person at home, a happier mother, and ABCD. So I don't, it's like, you have a career, maybe you have something else that you do. Maybe you are into construction, or you are into gardening, or you are into rearing chickens. It's just that for me, the thing that I do apart from work puts me in the public limelight, and obviously puts me under close scrutiny. But I don't think it's something that really takes up so much of my time that I'm able to do all the other things that I'm supposed to do. And the other question was, sorry, I've forgotten. What was the other question?
The other question was, what do you think about people expecting gospel artists to you know, sell their music at the same price as secular music? Shouldn't gospel music be cheaper because it's, in a way, spreading the word of God? That was the question.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's work. And you invest in this work, you know? I mean, if it was just music that you were just supposed to do for free, that investment would not be there. And at the end of the day, God will bless the works of your hands, you know? And this is the fruit of your labor. And at the end of the day, you want to have a return on it because it's work. Just from the point of going into the studio to having a CD on the shelf, what happens in between has to be, it's a lot of work. And it's and sometimes you don't even get a return on your investment, you know? And for myself, I'm just grateful that I have this job that is able to sort of sustain me. And this music, in as much as it's an investment on my part, I do it because it's, like I said earlier, it's an expression, of my faith, my worship God, and I feel like the responsibility that I have to share it. But I think that it's extremely unfair to expect that just because you are a gospel artist and you must invest so much and then not get a return on your investment. I think that's really extremely unfair. So, no, I don't think that it should be free or cheaper. No, I think that the status quo, as it is right now, is okay.
Okay, great. Well, I would just like to, you know, thank our listeners. If you have any more questions, you know, we still have a few minutes, you know, to ask any questions. I'm just going to go to area code 612, last number is 5190. Please go ahead with your question or your comment for Kanji.
To find out from your perspective as a lawyer, I don't know what field you cover, but on the issue of copyrights, what do you think either could be done? How do you feel about copyrights? And especially in Zambia,
okay.
I mean,
okay.
What's your comment?
Yeah. Well, piracy, especially, you know, in the music industry, the biggest virus that we have is piracy. You know, it's like when somebody buys one original CD, it's almost as though it's sold to 10,000 people, because once there's a soft copy, it has this ability to just spread like a virus. What is in place right now is something called a hologram, and this is like a recent phenomenon where it's a little, it's sort of like a sticker that you put on the CD to tell everybody who's buying the CD that this is an original CD. So anything that doesn't have a hologram on it, you know that it's a pirated copy. I think that the idea and the rationale behind it is obviously a very good thing to sort of curb this vice of piracy. But beyond that, I think that it's just a mindset that people have. You know, people don't want to go out there and actually buy on an original CD. They don't want to do that. And also this whole idea of having free downloads. People want to download music for free. They don't want to buy the music. Even when you direct people to sites like iTunes and Amazon, people don't want to actually pay for the music. It's a very difficult vice to curb, and I don't think that it's a phenomenon that is just peculiar to Zambia. I think that it's something that affects artists on a global scale. Releasing a hard copy album, I think it's just something that you do as an artist to sort of have a library or to have a history or to sort of a milestone for yourself, like I release this album. But it's almost like something impossible to curb. How do you curb somebody putting a soft copy and spreading it down? It's impossible. But I think that it's something that can be grateful for the Zambian government for having put in place the idea of a hologram. But in itself, It is like a drop in the ocean of what actually needs to be done to curb this virus of piracy. Like I said, it's a mindset.
Okay, well, Kanji, thank you so much for being on the show. We have come to the end of Diaspora and Truth. I'd like to thank all of our listeners for tuning in. Kanji's album is called Zanga. She can be found on Facebook. Her name is Mwizu Kanji Namwawa, and she's also on Twitter at She Sings Songs. And her album called Zanga is available on iTunes and Amazon. So please, if you enjoyed the few clips that I played, go ahead and buy her album, support Zambian music, buy it, as you've heard in the last point that we were discussing, you know, do not download it off of YouTube or anything like that. Please go ahead and support our artists by buying their music off of Amazon and iTunes. We would really appreciate it. Thank you, Kanji, so much for being on the show. We appreciate you coming and speaking to us.
Thank you so much for having me, and just want to say thank you to everybody who's supporting me on this journey, and it's been awesome. Thank you.
Great. So next we're going to have Mr. Charlie that is going to be on the show, and he's going to be discussing, you know, current affairs in Zambia, what is going on, what are our opinions, and what can we do about it. So we're going to end this show today by Kanji's song called Brand New that I played at the intro of the show. So please go, if you like the song, please go ahead, visit iTunes, buy her album. Thank you so much for tuning into Diaspora and Truth. Till next week, have a good Saturday.
Good morning and welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio. My name is Roger Achari. It is 10 a.m. in the Eastern Coast, 4 p.m. in Zambia. And what time is it in 22 hours in Perth, Australia. Welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio. It is snowing here, unbelievably. It is snowing in Okotok. It is minus 2 in Okotok, and it's supposed to be spring. Yesterday we had summer weather, we had rain, we had snow at the same time. This is Calgary, where all three seasons can happen in one single day. Amazing, 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 amazing. Well, let me welcome some of my regulars here. Nathan, good morning.
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Yes. Oh, well, that's the way we live here. I don't even know what to do now, Nathan. I don't really know what to do. Right now, it's snowing outside.
It's 68 degrees in Dallas, sunny, and yesterday it was 82.
It is unreal. It is very unreal.
It's a sign that you need to move, my friend.
It is. And this moving, I've said this weather this year has really pushed its limit. But here comes Brother Bianchi. Let's hear what he has to say, Brother Bianchi.
Roger. you're going to have to take our advice. You got to move. I can, this is beginning to affect you. Sooner or later, we will not recognize you. You better move while you can.
Thank you, Bianchi. I've been telling you that for a long time.
I agree with you. I agree with you. How does it snow on the 11th of April? I don't understand. I don't understand this. I really don't. I really don't. Well, there's a lot of our good friends in Pennsylvania. I think it should be raining in the East Coast.
Today, Varoja, it's shining, and I think we will have like a 70-degree weather. And I'm going to differ with Bianchi and Nathan. Roger, I think you should stay in Canada so you now inform us what's going on. That's part of it. And I was talking to my brother the other day in Zambia. You know, it's still raining in Zambia. This is April. So it's still raining. So it's good to know that in Canada, the weather is, you know, it's changing even in Zambia. I don't know what's going on, you know.
In Zambia, Titus, in Zambia, it doesn't rain in April. Rain should have finished by now.
Yeah, but this weather is changing. I'm told it's very cold now.
Yeah.
As of Furira, but here it's 44 degrees. They've stopped, but showered earlier. But it's 44 degrees here, which is warm for us in Minnesota.
44, yeah. What is this minus stuff we are doing?
No.
Well, we have a show. This morning, as always, full of stories. Let's begin with this story, which is amazing, Bianchi. Yeah, this story is coming from Pakistan. I don't know if every one of you guys have seen this story, where a 9-month-old boy was charged with attempted murder. Did you see that story, Bianchi?
No, I didn't see that story. Roger, I didn't know. Maybe that's at that age in that country, you can be charged with such a crime. You know, here in the United States, a 12-year-old can be charged with an adult crime.
I saw it this morning on Good Morning America. Who did the child try to murder or kill?
Okay, here is a brief story. The ordeal started February 1 when several police officers and bailiffs went to the home hoping to get a payment for a gas bill, says Mr. Bat, a senior police official. A scuffle ensued during which an infant's father, one of his teenager sons and others in the residence severely injured some of the officials by tossing bricks their way, according to Mr. Bat. Well, they went to collect the overdue payment for the bill. Now, you know where we come from. People put up a resistance, and the family started throwing stones at the police, and one of the policemen was severely injured. So they arrested the entire family, including a 9-month-old kid. He was on BBC yesterday being fingerprinted live on BBC. So,
okay.
Yeah. Now, what I don't understand, Bianchi, 9 months in Pakistan should mean 9 months in South Africa and in Zambia, in Canada and in the United States. 9 months is 9 months. Regardless of how we cook it, it is all 9 months. Do you really think this makes sense? By the way, let's put the record straight that this was withdrawn by the judge and threw it away. But let's just think about the police themselves for having taken a 9-month-old kid in the police custody and fingerprinting a 9-month-old child.
Well, Roger, I can't even fathom any logic out of this activity. So, I mean, what can I say?
Yes, I agree with you. Yes, I agree with you. No, any normal person can. We have our own case in Zambia, which is being reported by the Zambia Weekly. A girl, she was aged about nine years old, and a 13-year-old. They picked up 130 kwacha, and I don't know, from what I understand, they picked up from the street, and the owner, for some reason, identified the kids who picked up the money. They were locked up. The nine-year-old kid, a girl, was locked up, nothing. And all that are taken is 130. I was comparing the two cases. They may not be similar. 9 months is way out of range. 9 years, maybe. But with the two, in Canada, where I am here, Nathan, and everyone who is listening, Bianchi, I've lived in the United States for 10 years. Where you have a child in America kills somebody, 12-year-old child or 11-year-old child, you hear all these prosecutors, oh, we are going to charge him as an adult. Now he has grown up. We have to charge him as an adult so that if we have to kill him, we kill him, even if he's 11. Things like that never happen in Canada, Nathan. Never. You never hear stuff like that happen in Canada. One thing, I don't know how to put it, but the first question is, I've always asked my question this question. I don't know if I'm fair with myself sometimes. What is the consideration of life, Nathan? Where we come from? Say in Zambia. Say to our friends in Pakistan, what is the consideration of life? When you look back here, the way they are very, you know, they are very kind to each other, even if someone is wrong. A nine-month-old child will never go in any court in the Western world. Never, not in any court. What does it tell us about the societies where we come from?
Well, I tell you.
Go ahead, Bianchi.
I wouldn't put it past it. Now, you haven't, just because you haven't never seen it, don't say that you never will here in this society, United States.
I've seen it. I said in the United States, I've seen children, 11-year-old kid being charged as an adult. I've seen that in the U.S. But in Canada, you will never see stuff like that. There are cases here. It's unbelievable. People who have committed murders, they are still being paroled every time. They are coming out of jail every time.
But you don't have the demographics in Canada that you have here in the United States.
I agree with that. And that's where I'm coming. Nathan, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I was about to say that when you talk about the value of life, I mean, I think it's Bianchi who said something last week about looking into the criteria or the value system of different cultures and the different, you know, their legal system. You rightly pointed out to say a nine-month-old is 9 months in whichever part of the world they are. When you come to the value of life, I think that's a very, very important and crucial question. Because when you look at, like, for example, issues of crime rate and death rate related to crime, that's why you find that there's this argument, Roger, about the death penalty. I mean, I think most of the world doesn't have it. I know Europe, Africa, we do the, is it life imprisonment compared to death penalty? And I can be corrected. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are just speaking spontaneously or randomly here. The value of life is what you call it. It reflects a lot on a particular society, whether it's in Europe, Africa, or even.
Yes, yes. That's a big point you bring about the value of life. Titus, talk about this if you can. How do you see the value of life of a black person or a white person in the Western world? This is a very, very political question. I'm sorry if people are listening online, but it has to be addressed. And I say that when we read about how people in our own country are dying like chickens in the road. It is 6, 10, 20 died. And we don't even seem to be moved. This also comes to what we are talking about, where we can even send a 9-month-old kid to jail, a 9-year-old kid because they have picked up a 100, instead of the police saying, okay, go home, come with your parents, we have to discuss this and find a way. What does this tell us about the value of life, the black life especially, the black life, whether it be in the streets of Baltimore, streets of Philadelphia, or the streets of Lusaka in Zambia? Titus.
Well, I think you've got too many things. Maybe Piyangi can cover that better. But from my perspective, all I can say is it should be able to be reflected, like you are trying to think through, in terms of how we value life from a different perspective and a different area at the same time. It's by what people do with it. I'll go back to for Lusaka. I don't know if it's really Lusaka, but I'll call it for Zambia, where you're talking about these two kids, 9 and 11-year-old, who picked up 130, and if they're being put in jail and whatever, here they will have something advanced where they will do a recreational thing, community service or something like that, to show, teach them something about how probably not to do that. They'll correct the situation, not by some funny thing of 2 years in jail. Then you get into politics of how is the jail life for that 9 kids. It will actually dent her more than trying to correct the situation of picking that, is it 130 kwacha or 1,000 kwacha. So that's for our developing countries. I commented mostly from the Zambian perspective. But for here, You'll find it all the time. There's some correction measures that you can take that I think people are trying to correct a situation and, you know, doing two things at the same time. Stop whatever is going on, but at the same time teach somebody, you know. That's why if you save some time here in the Western world, it's like it's considered you've paid off for that thing, but they're also trying to make sure that probably you learned a lesson. And then the next time they do a crime, exact same thing, then they stiffen up the thing because they are understanding that you didn't learn anything, you know. But for developing countries, you don't even have room for that. You know, it's either dents you by what you went through in the jail, which you can only describe after you go there. We have no idea before that. So we are pushing people in jail without understanding what dent we are doing anyway. How are they?
What's the way? Any idea on this? Any thoughts?
Of course, Roger. Thank you. You always give me an opportunity to throw my two cents in there. And I'll share from my experience. The first time I came here, I had a friend who was working at the people are slow. I hate to use mental retardation, whatever, but the people are slow. The first time they took me there, Roger, I was real upset. And I said, what do you think? Because I'm an African, you're bringing me here, what? I was real, real upset. But after some time, I got to work there part-time too. And one time I was assigned to take 5 guys to the baseball game. And I drove them to the baseball game. And these guys are slow, you know. I think if, for most of people who have been in the States, you know, these people, I mean, the people are slow. And that was my best time in life when I took them to the baseball. And you give them money and you spend and you let them go spend that money, you know. And I was sitting there, I mean, I had the best time. I can't explain. I had the best time in my life, you know, with these guys. You know, they'll come back, hey, Daniel. And we'll be sitting there and talking. So to make the long short, the long story short, is how we've been taught, and in other countries, when they say that someone is mentally retardation, they think he's cursed or he's gonna bring bad luck and stuff like that. But again, when I say this, I'm not saying our people we're not smart, but in this country, the way the books have been written, the way the brain works, the way we process information and stuff like that, it had value to human life, Roger. But another thing I like about you, Roger, is the way you bring up these things, you know, and continue, my brother, you know, I like how you bring up these issues, because we need to discuss about things like that. So how we value human life, and about that 9-year-old and about the death sentence sometimes, Roger, it depends on how the kids, what kind of group is involved with it, because sometimes adults can use a young kid to go commit something and to take or to go kill somebody, and they said, okay, because he's a kid, for me, they're not going to arrest me because he's a child. So, you know, someday, but depends what kind of group is involved in. But if it was just an accident, or the kid was on, it just happened to, you know, it was an accident, you know, it's a total different how we should treat that kid. But if he's involved with adults and involved with a certain group and he commits a murder, and the law, it has to take its course. They have to charge him as a murderer, you know. That's all I can say. But I'm glad you are bringing up how we value life.
Let's also point out the child has been released by the court and now investigating the arresting officer and all the police people who were involved, because also actually in Pakistan they don't think it is the right thing to do. Area code 803, last phone number 3591. Good morning.
Good morning, all right.
Yes, my brother, how are you?
Good. This is Abu. I'm somewhere in Connecticut. The only thing that I can see around here is trees and stuff. So I don't even have network on my phone. So I decided to get my friend's phone. I'm like, hey, let me use your phone to listen to Mr. Roger here, because I don't have network on my phone. But I'm following your discussion.
Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Over life, you know, I wanted to go back to what my brother said about value of life between here in the United States and Zambia. But my point was, for me, life is not about like someone dying or, you know, someone getting shot or something. For me, it's about, you know, how for me, someone's life can end when without any justice, someone is like in prison. Like, for example, in Zambia, you know, like, people commit a crime without no proper evidence. They're being put in prison for Kaira and being, you know, without proper evidence. To me, that's right there, you know, someone's life is gone. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't really mean that someone has to die. Because why I'm saying this, I used to live in Long Acres. So each time I would go into Kabwara to play with my friends and stuff like that. And then each time I passed through Chumbokaila, I used to see like a fence. And then people with kids and whatever, they're locked up for life. So when I was a kid, I used to wonder, like, you know, what are those people doing? Why are they wearing those, white stuff and something like that? And then when I came to understand, you know, later on, is that, most of the people that are there, you know, they're being put there for crimes. That there's no proper evidence, no proper justice there set up in Zambia. So, you know, someone is locked up there, and then they're not even told when their case is going to be held. They're going to be there for 3, 4, 5 years. For me, that's killing someone right there, you know. So for me, you know, my main concern was like, if we can try to, you know, better, like, have some programs, like, especially in Zambia. I know America has some programs where you go to jail, there'll be someone, you know, trying to, if they're kids, some people will come to you, and, you know, they'll show you if you can be a cop, if you can do some other things for you to get out of jail. Because I watch all those programs on some of these cable channels, you know, some cops will come. If you want to go into the military, you have to attend certain schools and then go out of jail. But if we can have such programs in Zambia where, you know, if kids are locked up or their father were locked up, at least they're given some kind of opportunities to get out of jail and they do something for the community instead of just, you know, being locked up for the rest of their lives. There's no trial or stuff like that. That's killing someone right there. That, you know, I guess, you know, that's killing. They don't really have to be dead for their life to end. But if you lock them up and then just forget about everything else because there's no proper justice to look after them. To me, that someone is dead if they've been in prison for the rest of their lives without their case being paid or something. So, this is what my take.
Yeah. Okay. So it is this whole package, Nathan, I think, brought up the value, I think the value of life. It is huge. We are seeing it in our roads. People will die at the same corner. There will not be a proper investigation. There will not be any collective measures passed. And it continues to go that way. 6, 10 have died. President Sata is very sorry to hear these people have died and the Zambian people. Oh, well, what can we do? Life continues. I'm not sure. But this whole package needs to be addressed, and I've said it here on radio. For most of us who have experienced life here in diaspora, where we have seen the respect for life, I think Mother Zambia will need our input. Whether be in jail, the way people who are sent to jail should be treated. People who are traveling on the road, whether they are kids, the way they are treated. If something happens, the way they are treated, I think that needs to be addressed. It was a good discussion here, and I hope we can keep it to mind, try to improve even things back home. Some more stories from Zambia. There is a man. Where is this? This is in Kapirimposhi. A man, Nathan, has impregnated his own daughter, 13-year-old child. He's about now 5 months old, pregnant. I think he's being held by the police. What should happen to this man, Nathan? You are the judge.
Oh, my goodness, man. That's a very good question, Roger. And I'm reflecting on what the... Is it Zebron?
Yeah,
as just said about, you know, that's another aspect before I answer your question, which we don't look at life like Zebron has said. You can be put away or you can find yourself in situations and circumstances where you're as good as dead. So that situation of that man, it's very tricky because the question is if you lock him away, what happens to the family? But you see, that's just us discussing here. That's not the way the law looks at things. The law says he has defiled a child. In fact, it's called incest. Isn't incest? It's a crime in Zambia, isn't it? Yeah. So as we are going to analyze here, Zebron, Pianki, Titus, and the question is, what does the law say?
What does the law of the old days say, Nathan?
Say that again, Bianchi.
I was asking Nathan, what did the law in the old days say?
When you say old days, are you referring to the Bible times?
No, I'm talking about Zambia's traditional laws. How would Zambian traditions, society, before influence, how would they have handled that? Shall I say Bush
That's
law?
That's a very good question. Do we know what the law says? You're talking about when people were living in chieftains and things like that.
Absolutely.
Yes,
before the country was the way it is structured as we know it today. That's a very deep question, Bianchi. We shouldn't be quickly to answer it.
My guess, Bianchi, way in the village, if things like this was to happen, people will not even know it is the father who did it. They'll hide it from society. They will not tell anyone at the village it's a father who has done this. Not even his own wife will tell people at the village it's my husband who has done this to his own daughter. I could be wrong. Those who are listening, please give us a call. Our number is 1-347-237-4270. Give us a call if you have, you may have a different take on this. But my instinct, Nathan, even the wife will not tell the village, and this thing will go quiet. They'll keep it quiet. And that, I'm sure it used to happen.
That's traditionally, that's generally how things would happen in a very, I'll use the word conservative loosely, in a very conservative, or let me say in a very traditional African concept that tell you not to take family matters into the public arena. That's what happened. Zebron, are we on track here?
For me, my take on that one is that, you know, child defilement is a very serious case, even in Zambia right now.
Yes, it is.
It's a very serious case. And I know there's this guy called General Kanene. I don't know if you guys know about him. He was being accused of defrauding
a girl.
I think he's going to spend, I don't know if it's 12 or something years in jail or something like that. But my take on child defilement would be, you know, if someone defiles a child, it's very serious. I had my little girl who was defiled by one of the guys, but he was young, so he went to a minor prison. It was a very emotional case, you know. Because once you defile a kid's life away, you know, that kid will not grow straight. To be scared about guys, they'll be so, they'll have nightmares and stuff. So, to me, it's a very serious case. But my take on how to punish these, I think I have a different, opinion. I would, if I was in charge, I wouldn't really lock these guys up. Because if someone defiles a child, you go lock them up, you are hiding them from someone else. They are all hidden in prison, they'll think they're thugs, they're someone who robbed the bank and stuff like that. If I was a judge and if I was to make my own laws, I'd have the cops have these guys stand at the city market with a poster, child defilement, for 3 or 6 months straight. You know, go to the community with something written on them, I defiled a girl, you know, I'm sorry, something, do community work. Let those people be exposed and be embarrassed, you know what I'm saying? So that someone, before they defile a child, they know that they're going to be exposed in all their community that they defiled a child. They'll start doing community work. Something that has to put them in the public so that everyone knows what they did. Because if that person defaults someone, the police come, pick them up, lock them up, they're hidden in jail right there. That's it. They're hidden in jail. They're just like whatever. But for me, before they go to jail, they have to be exposed. You know, that's something that someone does not want to have. Because way back, as someone said, as we said, that thing used to be kept secret so not to embarrass the father from the rest of the community. So now that if you start exposing those things, that's like, for them, it's a very, very big impact if they have to be embarrassed into the rest of the community. Because if someone embarrassed defiled a child, they'll hide it, you know. They'll hide it. I mean, I'm not saying you should expose them to there and say, oh, I defiled the Miriam. No, don't write someone's name there, but just say, oh, I defiled someone, I defiled a girl. I'm a child offender or something. I'm a sex offender. Here, if I'm not mistaken, people here, you know, you have to be registered sex offender so that wherever you go, if you have to get a job, look up your record, they say, oh, this is a sex offender, just so you know. In Zambia, it's supposed to be the same, but since Zambia does not have that technology, those people have to be exposed to the community. They have to be exposed to the public. Everyone has to know what they did. They have to see their faces. But before someone defiles the child, they know that once they're caught, they're going to be exposed there before they face justice. For me, I have no pity for people who defile children. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can't check, I don't know if it's your son, your daughter or something, but as long as that person is a minor, I have no pity for someone who goes after kids, man. Because that kid has a life, you know. You've lived your life, you've grown up, you're supposed to decide what you have to do, but let the kids have their own life. Don't go and attack them, they're powerless. You just go and put all your body on there. To me, that's sad. I have no pity for people like that.
Okay.
You know, I'm sorry. I have no pity for I would expose them, and then before the first time,
yeah,
just let everybody know.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. If someone was standing at the corner, I made my own daughter pregnant. Yeah, that would be very, very interesting to hold.
To hold
that sign at the corner of the road. Those who are calling in, if you want to say something, please indicate. You can press one on your phone, and it will bring you up there. Bianchi, you brought up that interesting question. Do you think? I think I've seen it in California. What Zebron was saying, someone did something, and the judge punished him. Go and stand at the road with a sign of what you did. It was in California. I think the judge sent one to do that.
Well, you know,
judges
have discretion to do that in the United States. But, you know, I was in Benin one time, 1 year in. It was this Benin man who was laying down in a public square. He was naked, and I think he had been beaten, and come to find out he was a thief, and that's the way they handled that particular problem. But, you know, even though we long for the old days, as societies move into modernity, you have to implement laws that will protect the innocence of a child. And that would have to be addressed in the creation of your constitution, where, you know, all citizens have a certain protection, and that would be the proper way to do that today. But I was just curious how that would have been handled back in the traditional method.
Okay, those who are joining us, Namungi and Daniel and the others, the question on the table was what the gentleman, Mr. Msonda, in Kapirimposhi, made his own child, a 13-year-old child, pregnant, and he's been arrested. And the gentlemen on the line have been appointed to be judges. What would you want them, this man, how should he be treated for impregnating his own child? A very interesting suggestion from Zebron. He should wear some kind of a sign at the bus stop, and it should say, I made my own child pregnant. That should be taken. Okay, thank you so much for that. Unless others have to pitch in, Titus, did you, I don't know, want to pitch in there?
I second what the gentleman, Zebron, says. I think there's too many, there's just a couple of ways to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to come up with a consensus of a format, or like Bianchi says, where the judge has a discretion of what he can prescribe as, you know, a judgment. But I think we have to all come up with an agreement on how, like the way Bianchi puts it on the Constitution, there have to be some areas where, you know, because what I may do today might not please the other person, but to me, that's how I feel. I may happen to be a judge and then, you know, say something because so I should have borderlines within my discretion of what I can do, and again, it should be consensusly correct for the rest of the people to understand that, okay, that's a better way, because somebody will say, hey, you know, somebody might not want their father to be exposed that way and all those kind of things, so they will not favor that.
If at all, the law,
you know, you understand that that's what happens, then there's nothing you can do. I'm part of the people that said, yes, it should happen this way, you know. Which is why
but you know what?
Very important.
You know what, Roger? Now, here in this country, the DuPonts have been accused of doing those things, and they never go to jail. You just had a case here not too long ago where one of the DuPonts did not receive. The judge said it wouldn't be fair to put him in that type of confinement. And years ago, it was a case where one DuPont, I believe, murdered a lover, a male lover, and nothing ever happened to him. So the corruption runs rampant.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we had that story in Austria where he had five children, Nathan, with his own child. There are sick six people out there. What we can do, I don't know as a society, but some of these people are sick, needs to be put away from children. But as Zebron is saying, there's also corrective measures, which I think will serve an example to others if they were to go through this kind of embarrassment. Something might change. Let's go to Lusaka. There are a lot of stories coming from Lusaka. From nowhere, Nathan, and everyone was called here, the president's son is emerging. He was, I don't know if he was a deputy mayor or something, but now he's a mayor within two years. Is this, the right way of putting this question is, number one, is this on merit or it's because he's the president's son? Question number two, which Titus may take is, are we seeing the ascendance of this young man to be the objective of the big man for him to go to the highest office of the land? What do you say, Nathan, to begin with, on the question of Barry? Is I don't know what is his name. Musonda Sata? What's his name?
Katoishi.
Mulenga Sata. Mulenga Sata.
Uh-huh.
Is this a question of merit, or is it just a question of because the father is a politician in Zambia, is a president?
Personal opinion, I doubt if it's on merit. It's the other question that I might raise is, did he have a challenger? If he didn't have a challenger, that answers every other question that we are going to raise. That's what I'll say on that.
Actually, I think he was an opponent. He was an opponent.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who's going to oppose him?
Yeah.
Who's
yeah,
going to
yeah,
oppose
yeah.
him? That person who opposes him knows what the consequences are going to be. I mean, we're just talking open here, things that are in the media. It's not like we have some privileged information somewhere from the red brick in Lusaka. This is public information.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't he have a challenger? That's the question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
It is a good question which we should be followed up. Now, the scary mm-hmm. part, which all of us should be, I think, concerned about, if this continues, and then we find he's in PF tomorrow because they're able to play whatever game they're able to play, is president, shouldn't this concern all of us? Because this man was an head of 3 years ago. We never even knew Mr. Sata had a child called Mulenga Sata. He is not coming from a political family, so to say. He was an head of. And if he is coming into the system because of privileges as president's son, this creates a problem if it is allowed by Zambians to go on even up to state house. This is why I think I was concerned about this story, Titus.
Okay, let me come in, Roger, just to twist the balls a little bit. I think this issue of unopposed, it takes some people that have the courage, because sometimes when you see the level ground at which you know that money is going to be pushed up, and maybe you don't even want to be intimidated by those kind of things, you have to have your own courage that even if they push in money and whatever happens, you can still win that election and draw what Nathan said, all these interrogations or what can come around you for contending somebody like that. So some people don't want to deal with that. Some people don't want to, you know. So it's just something. But to twist things around, have you guys ever thought about, because I see this trend going, I mean, have you thought through about the presidency? I think this is one area we haven't looked into, like pertaining the constitution. From the look of things, the presidents that have been coming up now, you can go back to Kaunda who had the couple of kids, but nothing really happened in terms of maybe them swindling, doing this and that. But when you come out from, I think Chiruba also, the late Chiruba did not have too much, except the Castro was vicious on some certain areas. But to me, it comes in my mind that we should put something to a stop here. I'll go back to RRB Rupiah Banda, who had older kids, and if they're swindling, it means all this number of kids swindling is a lot to take out of the pot for Zambia. So somehow we should consider, if you, Roger, you are the presidential candidate, we should really look at how many kids do you have. You know, because when you start plundering and you have a few, it's much better for the country. What we are going through, we have talked about SATA, that's why I'm looking at this. These are kids. Sometimes there's kids this way and that way, and they are all SATA. And if they start taking from the port, you are going back to almost RRB, you know what I mean? Almost going to RRB with adult kids.
That way. What do you mean the president has kids? What do you mean the president has kids this way or that way?
Not from one mother. Okay, let me be specific. Not from one mother. So this is why you never knew about this Mulenga SATA or something like that. There's another one who got married recently. The SATAs did not even attend. I don't know what he does. But in short, all these guys will be SATAs. And if they want to do something, they will come into the political arena where they can be contending for this and that. And they might be popular because of time and whatever is going on. But my question is just, we should be careful with this presidential candidate, because you can check him out now. You can check Nevers Mumba now, HH and Chipimo, how their families are. I think, to me, it's been bothering me in terms of if it's a plunder. You saw when RRB was going to for holiday, it was children who have kids that also go there and business transaction at Mfue, which is public holiday. It will get to the SATA, you know, there will be all these positions, whether it's a councillor or mayor. Isn't the other one already a mayor or something like that? So, I mean, there should be a trend of whatever after mayor, I don't know what you do, what you get to.
Okay. But
maybe.
Okay. That's one. Thank you for that, Titus. Thank you for that. It's very critical that we look at the family people have, they are bringing. Lastly, let's Zeb lead us into this story. This is a business story. Is it, what's the name here? Pound Stretcher. Pound Stretcher. I think it's like a dollar store. If it was here, we'd probably be talking about a dollar store. Pound Stretcher has opened. It's a UK store which has opened up a mega store in Zambia. Opened up for the first mega store in Zambia. 6,500 square meters. It is going to be selling discounted products for the home of Kafue. Number one question, Zeb, we are going to deal with here. There are a lot of, that's a small paragraph, but this is huge if we were to do a case study on this. These are discounted products. First question is, how should we receive this as Zambians? Are these products going to be made in Zambia, or they are coming from China or United Kingdom?
Yes. They're coming from China and the United Kingdom. I personally, if I had authority, I wouldn't allow it. Plus, look at the disruption of your street vendors, your roadside entrepreneurs, and so forth and so on.
Okay, go on, build your case. Let's go on, Pianki, you are on the right track, I like that.
Well, yes, it's true. I mean, look at Walmart today. Under Walmart's auspices, they're selling produce, they're selling clothes, they're doing financial transactions, they're doing dentistry, they're doing optometry. So something like that would greatly displace people in Zambia who's working on the street alongside the road, chop shops, and so on and so on. I would be totally against that. It presents unfair competition against your local people. Now you got local people who are discontent, out of work, cannot send their children to school, and the can of worms is just running wild now.
Roger,
can I come in?
Wait.
Go ahead.
I'll wait for what you say. Go ahead.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Okay. Roger, my view was a little bit slide, almost like Yankees. My question would be, how are you going to have the biggest mega store supporting something from the UK, and then you don't even have British Airways landing in the same Zambia? To me, it doesn't make sense. How are you going to exploit Zambia when your plane, you've started moving out of Zambia? The reason that you would not be there, even the visa office is in South Africa for a British visa. I mean, it's like you've pointed that it's not worth to be here, but why would you bring a mega store to exploit Zambia again from the same Europe? I think we have to be having a little bit of some things in line. You might as well bring China, who might land their plane there, you know.
I like that, Titus. I like your thought, Titus. I do like your thought.
It's true, Roger. I mean, the British, they don't want to be there. It's okay. They can go. I mean, Emirates is even better anyway.
Yeah, you just have a mega store from Dubai or something than the UK. I mean,
no, not from
land
Dubai.
That much?
Titus, not from Dubai. Let the rich Zambians start one. Why do we want a foreign store?
Right, correct. Let Zambia start a store.
Let the Zambians start one. Give them the capital to start one. We don't
and
need
you know
a foreign
what?
Store.
One thing that I don't know and why it's not happening is the people that have the money. Now
mm-hmm.
we're talking a subject of give them the money. GBM has money. All these children have money. We need to be able to talk to them and convince them to say, start a megastore. If you look at Mazabuka, Nathan, you used to live in Mazabuka. Baguz had opened some shop around opposite the police station in retaliation to the ShopRite when it came into Mazabuka. He opened a big shop, bigger than ShopRite, and competed. But I'm sorry to say, after maybe 20 years, now it's a South African shop. They are renting from him.
Yes.
Finally gave up. So
I
don't know what happened. But anyway, that was an Indian. So, again, it's not a Zambian. So all I'm saying is, we should start looking at empowering the same Zambians. Forget trying to find money. There are some Zambians that have money. But again, we have to convince them into doing those kind of things, because the issue is not that they don't have the money. They have it. But if they don't have interest, this is how we're opening up for another person of a different thing, whether the British or whoever, South African guys coming in to do some. I mean, just 1 week when the South African megastore opens, they make millions of profits from where? From Zambia. So they should be, there's a detachment as Zambians. We are the same Zambians that are going to spend. And then a foreign person comes and opens up. And the question is not that we don't have rich Zambians. We have them. But they are not in those fields. They are either in politics. You know, people move to politics. UPM
or maybe
politics.
They are not encouraged, or maybe they don't get
that's
the
what,
support.
Yes. That's what I mean. That's what I mean. Uh-huh. I mean, they need to have. If I was to suggest to the government, I would say pump into all these mega things. Get two rich Zambians partner with Chinese in all these mines that they were dealing with. Don't sell off the whole mine to a foreign person. And what is happening now? After the Chinese leave, then the government has to do this receivership or maintenance, whatever they'll call it. You know. Watch
okay.
for under it.
Exactly.
What's coming here on this question, Zebra, as we are coming to wind down, what are the other means of us engaging this new mine? Or what are, maybe let's not look at it on the negative side. What are the opportunities? How can we look at it positively as this megastore are opening in Zambia, which is a big country?
The megastore is there to serve the affluent and the middle class in Zambia. I can understand. But at the same time, you know, the average Zambia is not going to go there. But Zambians should control the megastore. Why should you let you know, look at the capital that will be leaving your country. You got rich, you got the well-to-do Zambians spending money in a mega store, and that money is leaving the country. The money is supposed to circulate around in order to help those who are less fortunate.
Hello?
Yep. Yeah, go ahead, Debo.
Yes.
Go ahead, Debo.
On the contrary, I'm going to disagree with you guys this time. After I heard that it's a British company coming to Zambia to sell the stuff, in my own opinion, I won't come to that decision. Why? Because personally, I'm just tired of having so many Chinese and Indian products put in the Zambian market. And we've been buying those things for a very long time. And we've been crying for Zambians to come up with stores and whatever, but nothing is happening. So if I hear a British stuff coming to Zambia, products coming to Zambia, for me personally, it's kind of comforting because I think they can bring the competition to these cheap products from India and China that are flooding the market. That you buy them, use them for 2 months, use 2 months for a month and a half, they're finished. You have to go back to an Indian store, buy more shoes, use them for another 2 months, they're gone. So if I hear that the British are coming,
Not to cut you short, Zebra. Whether it is the British or the American bringing the discounted store, I can guarantee you that stuff will all be coming from one source, and that one source is called China.
Yeah, but you have to know that, even the American products we buy here are made in China. But, you know, you have to understand
That's my point. Yes.
Yeah, but you have to understand that if Nike goes to China and makes the product and sells them to you, and then if an Indian man goes to China and makes the product, sells it to you, those products are of two different qualities. Okay. The Nikes and whatever, they go, they check it. They make the stuff from China, but they only use the labor in China. The equipment that they use is probably shipped from France. It's a very high-quality equipment. The material is good. They use Chinese labor. But if you get Indian products use everything from India, and the quality is very low. So all the things that are used are China, but the quality is different depending on who makes it and what kind
Let
of
me come in, Roger.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, no, hold on. We have come to the end of our discussion. I'm looking at it as the opportunity side of things. If government can put in a clause in the agreement that, let's say, 60% of your products which will be sold in this store will be Zambian made, you know, let's allow promote the businesses. We have seen it. Starbucks does it. To some extent, McDonald's does it in India. They are promoting the farmers there. Even these people who are coming to open with their capital, they have the capital, which we may not have. Let's encourage them to open these stores. But we are going to say, we are going to do a stock check every month that a Zambian product has to be here. Don't tell us it's poor quality. You have to find a way of bringing that product in this store and improve it. That is, I think, one of the best ways. Bianchi's point, us allowing some of these stores to sell cheap stores, you know, it's a store. They are not going to manufacture or create a lot of jobs. It's only the jobs in the stores. Get the much needed foreign exchange and send it away. That's what they are going to do.
You know, Roger, this thing about Zambia is not having the capital. That should be a discussion. Not today. You don't have time, I know, but maybe another time.
Yeah. Yeah. We've run out of time. But join me again next week. We bring all these stories. Think about them. If you have another point, bring it when we have a little bit of time. But coming up next is Nathan on Perspective. Johnny Craig?
Yes. We are wishing KK happy birthday. We are talking to a team member.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Nathan. Go ahead, Nathan.
Bonanga, bonangum poetu china, la pecuna, la pecuna. Now I'm Victoria Mpenge.